So why don't we take a moment and recognize our guest of honor. His name is Mike Bryant.
Correct.
Go by Mike or Michael?
Mike is fine, yeah.
Okay. And go ahead and give us a few sentences about yourself.
I'm a licensed professional engineer and structural engineer in the state of Illinois and some other surrounding states. I've been doing this work and actually inspecting your dams for over 30 years, probably longer than many of your residents have even been around. And I know I've been through half a dozen managers over the years. I've been through three incarnations of companies. I've been sold twice, but fortunately, you guys have sought me out and kept me around for as long as I have. So, very fortunate to have been able to work with you all these years.
We appreciate you serving us for all of these years. That's a long time to have continuity, which is continuity helps a lot. And we have a few members of the Land O'Lakes Committee here. Steve. So, what we could. Get started. We don't have many topics at all since it's a special meeting. Just the main purpose of it is to talk about the Parker Corner, the Lower Lake Silt Dam, which has been identified as being in. Well, I'll let Mike tell the condition. I won't preempt his presentation. So, well, we'll let you get started, Mike.
All right. Hope you're planning to be here for a long time, see. Nope.
I'll get the door unlocked for you.
Mike, would you like a microphone or just?
No,
because I realize your voice is going.
I tend to boom, okay. You know, but my voice might drop off. I'm trying to get rid of this cold here right now.
Exactly, that's what I said.
If you can't hear me, throw something at me, and I'll speak up. Like I said, I've been your engineer and done your annual inspections on these dams for 30 years. The last six-ish years, I'm not entirely sure when we did it. I've also been inspecting your bridge. That's a whole different beast. And it was only a few years back that it was even recognized as a bridge and became part of the IDOT's and federal database requiring biennial inspections, and I hold the appropriate credentials with the state for inspecting and also as your program manager. I don't know if you even realized you had an appointed program manager for your bridge, but that I was appointed that many years ago when the issue first came up. And as was alluded here earlier, I literally know where some of the skeletons are buried out here. Many of you probably know there used to be a water plant on the upper dam that was demolished a few years ago, and there are things, remnants of that are buried in the dam. I know where those are and what they are. And also, you know, I'm not sure if you realize it or not, but on the lower dam, just the other side of the spillway, there used to be a seep over there. The ground used to get very, very soggy in certain times of the year. That's going back 20-plus years ago. A drainage tile system was installed there, and if you go look down at the spillway, at the outlet, on the far side wing wall, there's a little pipe that comes around, and it always seems to have about a pencil-sized trickle of water coming out of it. That's the outlet from that seepage drain tile system.
And what's the origin of that?
It was never fully investigated. It's assumed that it's groundwater seepage coming from this highland area that's going under the spillway and was percolating out. It wasn't thought to be seepage through the dam, but that was never fully investigated. We just know that, you know, having the seep there in the soft soil prevented proper maintenance of the vegetative cover, proper mowing. So wanted to dry that up so that you can do a really great job maintaining your dam and protect the dam and avoid loss of soil or erosion areas happening through there. So it was a very effective solution many, many years ago.
Is that when they built that, redid the wall over there?
No, this is on the far side of the spillway. It's probably...
Can I interrupt just a second? So, because I'm a visual person, there's a map over there. Is there a way that maybe we could, you could point to the... bring that around and point to the...
Yeah, I think so. Not sure if you can see clearly here or not. It's way down in this corner.
You want to leave it there or move it to here? Or...
Thanks.
But yeah, this green represents the spillway here. See if I can get over here where I'm out of everybody's way. So the green is the spillway, and there's the seep was in this area here, kind of the upper half of the dam, just beyond the spillway. And it's just a system of perforated pipe buried in the surface that collects that seepage water before it comes out on the surface, so the surface can be maintained dry and properly mowed. And that pipe system just collected the water and routed it down and into the channel around the end of the spillway wing walls. Yeah, again, you know, several things that have happened over the years, nothing really major or significant. But certainly something that could easily have been lost in the archives. I'm sure, you know, everybody has read my 30 years of reports. So, and actually had a complaint from a member out here, I want to say maybe 8 years ago, that they were wondering why you were paying for me to provide the same report every year. And that was a very astute observation, because if you read the reports, they are very, very similar from year to year. But that's due to people like Mr. Johnson over here and his staff and the great job they do maintaining your dams for you. There's almost nothing happening year to year, and so there's almost nothing to change in the reports.
Stability is good in this case.
This is very true. Now, years ago, you had a manager that, this is probably 20 plus years ago, that wasn't quite as good at maintaining the dams. I remember one year I did an inspection on the lower dam, and the weeds were about here, and that was the whole surface of the dam. And I literally cut my way through with a machete, and I could see, you know, that much of the dam surface as I'm walking through these areas. Made it very, very difficult to inspect that year. We made a comment about that in the report. It got repaired the next year. Things were a lot better, and they've been very, very nice, almost lawn-like, as you see now, ever since. So congratulations to Mr. Johnson and his predecessors, who've done a great job for you guys.
And that is the guideline, to not have any brush or trees growing on the dam.
That is absolutely correct, yes. There isn't a particular guideline as far as how frequently to mow it, but they do, they being Department of Natural Resources, likes low vegetation, almost lawn-like, 8-inch high or less, so that, one, you cause rodents and other burrowing animals to not want to live there because they can be seen by predators, and two, just so that you can see what's going on when Daryl and his team do their quarterly walkthroughs. They can easily see where problems might be developing and address those before they become significant issues.
Can't see anything if you have 6 foot tall weeds.
Exactly. So, you
know, I know in the past you up there talking about the weeds on the dam. We burnt them off in the fall. Is that a good practice?
I will say that officially DNR does not like that. Because you burn it all the way down the ground, and depending on when you do it, the vegetation may not have time to recover before winter snows, and then you can have erosion problems when the snow melts because there's no vegetation there. However, one of the projects I worked on many years ago for the state of Illinois, one of their dams, the owner operation maintenance plan we put together for them on that, we addressed maintenance because they couldn't mow it. It was too steep. And they said, we burn it. You know, so, hey, if they can burn it, you can burn it.
If you're going to burn it, it's best to do it in the spring property?
Best to do it in times when there's opportunity for the vegetation to grow. I wouldn't recommend the spring because then you get the immediate rains. Midsummer, wouldn't be a bad time. It tends to be drier, less precipitation, and opportunity for vegetation to regrow before the cold snaps get here. Plus, on the upper dam, there's so much riprap on the upstream slope that is overgrown by vegetation, and that's really something I think we comment on in the report this past year, that's a little bit heavy vegetation, and it's very difficult to maintain because you really can't do anything except weed whackers. So that's a great area to burn. The alternative is you spray herbicides, but then that runs into the lake, and that's not good for the biology of the lake.
Do you recall that used to be burned?
I don't know that I recall it being burnt.
I've been told that.
That's, I remember, it used to be cleaned out, and a lot of the riprap was very visible.
I thought it used to burn.
Now it's almost not.
Yeah. I think it was more towards fall, but maybe late summer. We'd burn it up because it was so thick.
It's a good idea to try and keep that down as much as possible. Because those are areas where the little shrubby and woody vegetation does tend to grow, and it's a little more difficult to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not telling you shouldn't. I'll say you shouldn't. I'm not telling you can't. It's your dam. You need to maintain it as best to your guys' systems. Just real briefly on the dams, give you a little bit of history on the regulatory side of things. You have both the upper and lower dams, and they're both high hazard class 1 dams, meaning that if the upper one fails, the breach wave will negatively impact property owners around the lake, the lower lake. If the lower one fails, the breach wave will negatively affect people and property downstream, even probably over top the county highway a couple miles downstream. So hence they're high hazard dams. That means that they're required to be inspected by a professional engineer, myself, annually, and provided reports to DNR on those inspections on DNR's forms, which is what we provide to you folks. We also go above and beyond the minimum requirements by giving you our summary letter that says, just so you don't have to try and read and interpret this form, here's the important things that we see, and that always seems to start out with, you're doing a great job, which you really are. Again, kudos. Occasionally there's an issue or two that we make mention of, and those things are, generally I've seen those addressed the next year or almost immediately. The bridge, now that's a little bit more of an interesting situation. You can imagine if the dams are not maintained well and you start to get erosion, it's going to be a long time before anything serious happens or the dam might fail. Bridge, on the other hand, if it's not maintained and you're not noticing things happening, can be a sudden catastrophic failure, and you've seen examples of news stories where failures occurred, loss of life or other things that make something you don't want to have happen. Your bridge is the same age as the dams, somewhere on the order of 40 to 50 years. I forget exactly when it was built. The Federal Highway Administration National Bridge Inspection Standards Program requires it to be inspected every 2 years. Again, I do that for you. I just include it with the dam inspections, and I look at it, I don't do the report, but I look at it from the same perspective with the same eye in the off years, just so I can tell you what's happening, if anything serious there. I mentioned the program manager, which you folks or prior board appointed me as several years ago. And Farnsworth Group does have more than just me that has those credentials for bridge inspection, and also other people who are qualified to do your dam inspections. In fact, I mentioned to Daryl in this past one that since I'm getting a little long in the tooth, I'm looking to transfer those responsibilities and the historic knowledge of your facilities over to one of our younger people. The guy I'm training right now on the bridge inspection, dam inspections, Is not yet a licensed engineer. He'll be eligible for that in a couple of years, so it's going to be a little bit of a transition. But the advantage to you folks is your charges are going to go down because he doesn't get billed at the same rate I do. So you know, you'll get an advantage, plus he'll be able to do the inspections, have me review those, and I'll maintain that same continuity and pass that on to him. So you'll be doubly benefited by that.
What's his name?
Brandon Larson. Let's see, I think that's everything on that. So the other topic that I was asked to talk about is the Harkness Corner sanitation basin project. We were asked to submit a proposal last spring to design repairs for that. During the discussions of what the scope for that project might be or ought to be, you know, we're talking about, you know, how your association could save money and not have us do things that you could do yourselves. And so if you have seen the original of the proposal, you know, it says we're going to do this, this, and this.
If you don't mind, could you back up a step from your inspection of it?
Yeah.
You kind of start from the... I'm just... Could you back up and just do kind of a verbal evaluation of it?
Of
the Lower Lake Silt Pond Dam.
Okay. Yeah. So what we found when we initially looked at that is that the purpose of that is to keep sediments out of your main lake, to trap the sediments, let them filter out there. That's a lot easier to dig out the sediments and dispose of that material than trying to dredge it out of the main lake. And it serves a very good function and operates very well. Over the years, as anything with a concrete surface on it does, it deteriorates, cracks, begins to fall apart. And at the time we looked at it, there were large cracks, large voids, visible underneath the slab. It was beyond just repair, just simple repair, and warranted replacement of the concrete weir. Now, there's an interesting opinion or policy for Department of Natural Resources. You can do just about anything you want to your dams, as long as you replace it in exactly the same configuration as what you have, and they call that maintenance and doesn't require any real action or permits on their part. This is kind of an extension of your permitted lake, because part of your permit is the upper reaches and that you have the right to flood those areas when the lake level rises. So this is all part of that same issue. So even though that's not a dam and isn't it in and of itself permitted, it's still part of your permit. So what we looked at it was, we can remove the concrete, replace it generally to the same configuration as what's there, give you a new structure that will last you, I'm not going to say another 50 years that has, but you know, for many, many years certainly. We looked at it, at Darrell's request, said, yeah, this is something that needs to be addressed. We need to do some major work on this. And so we submitted a proposal that said we were going to design and repair and give you plans. It's a fairly simple project, really. Talked about, the normal steps after having plans, bidding, construction award, contract award, construction oversight, inspection, and contractor payment. And really, there's nothing extraordinarily difficult about that. So it was kind of decided, I'm not sure if Darrell took it to the board or if it was just, Darrell's call at that time, but it's kind of like, why do you need to pay us to send out copies of the plans and ask contractors for proposals to do this work? And you don't. It's a fairly simple process. Once you get those bids, evaluate those, decide who you want to award it to, make the award, sign their proposal, you know, whatever documents your board requires, and then turn them loose. They do the construction. You know, Daryl or others, you know, keep an eye on it, make sure they're doing what the clients say they're supposed to do. And at the end of the day, when they're done and you're happy, they send you a bill, you authorize payment, you pay it. It doesn't really require a licensed engineer or a consulting firm to do a lot of that stuff. So
when it was done, when it would be done, though, I think we'd want somebody to go in there and verify that everything was done structurally correct.
And, you know, if that's your choice, yeah, then we'd be happy to do that for you. Okay. But this was all in an attempt to minimize your cost to us to have this project done, to let you and the staff here you know, handle just as much as you could without having to engage us. Saves you money, you put it into construction rather than design. Okay. So as I understand it, you basically did that, although the one step that got kind of skipped in this was we provided a set of plans, two-page set of plans that were marked not for construction. And when we submitted that to you, it was, here's the plans, look it over, see if you have any comments. If you don't, we'll issue four construction plans. If you do, let's address those, and we'll give you a new set and put those modifications marked for construction. That really didn't happen, and there's no real issue with the fact that it didn't. But those not for construction plans were distributed to the contractor. You got proposals back from three. And as I understand it, you know, they were sent to me to review just a couple weeks ago, I guess it was. You know, there's a vast difference in the three proposals. I don't recall the exact numbers, but, you know.
Like $40,000.
It's significant.
Significant.
Very significant. And the low proposal, as I remember it, was actually worded as, this is a value engineered proposal, meaning contractor looked at the plans and said, I see what they're trying to do. I can do it cheaper. Exactly what that means, I don't know. But, you know, then, you know, somewhere along the process here, Daryl got a hold of me and asked, you know, what about value engineering? What is value engineering? You know, is that something that's appropriate to do? And, you know, we talked through it, and yeah, it's, you know, not uncommon to value engineer things, but usually it's after the project's awarded. Usually you get proposals on what was bid or what was in the package. You evaluate those proposals, you make the award. Then if the contractor comes back and says, you know, I can do that cheaper if I do it this way, rather than the way it's designed, and, you know, then you decide amongst yourselves, do you want to go that route and save money, or, you know, maybe you come back to me and go, what about this? You know, is this a valid cost-cutting method? And I'll be straight with you, if that was the case. If it's something that I'm going, no, that's not going to hold up more than 5 years, and, you know, you don't want that, I'll tell you that too. So, yeah, we're kind of at a point now where you've got the plans, you've taken bids, you got three vastly different bids. You don't really know how to evaluate the apples and oranges of those. So we were asked to submit a new proposal to help you through this, the rest of this process, to help you evaluate those bids, even rebid the project if that's appropriate, to make a recommendation to you for award. You know, if you want us to work with the low bidder and work on a value engineered solution, we can certainly do that too. And then, you know, do some construction oversight and contract administration. Make sure he's doing things the way he's supposed to, as opposed to just look at it at the end and see if he did it right, but actually, you know, check things along the way, which there are a couple steps, you know, where that would be appropriate to do. And then, you know, when all's said and done, he submits his invoice. We look at it and say, yes, it looks like he did everything he was supposed to do, and he's asking for 100% payment. We recommend you pay it. And you know, project's over and done. So that's the proposal that you have, that I provided, a week-ish ago. Mm-hmm. Don't know if everybody's seen that or not, but, you know, there's check boxes effectively in that proposal. It says, if you want us to do this, check here. If you want this, check here. And, you know, we can then provide you the services that you want, that you feel are valued to you. and not do other things that, you know, if you don't feel are quite so valuable and don't want us to provide to you. So, and with that, you know, I'll open to questions, you know, either about the project as a whole, you know, the Harker's Corner project, anything to deal with that proposal, or anything else that I've touched on this evening that you have questions or just want more information about.
I have a couple of comments. One is that we're really staffed below what we should be here in the office with just Daryl there. So that's one of the reasons that there's some thought that we need someone to overlook this. Another one is that in the evaluation, you hit it on the button there as far as evaluating apples and oranges. The bids were kind of didn't have a lot of information on them, from what I saw.
Right.
Pretty basic. Here's a number. and then also, there was kind of a cover sheet with ancillary-related things that needed to be done, that it was unclear if those were included or excluded or what. The bids really didn't address those, did they?
I mean, the way I would interpret the proposals that you got was you gave them the plans and said, we want you to build this for us. They gave you a number. If they didn't exclude specifically certain things, it's included.
And this is a pretty basic job or something like that.
Exactly.
That's the way I took that.
Yeah. You know, it's demo the concrete, regrade it, compact it, put new concrete down, put some new riprap on the downstream side to protect the outlet, regrade, vegetate, and you know, leave a nice job when you're done.
So with your 30 years past experience and however long you've been doing this, just from your personal opinion, based on what you've seen down there, is this something that needs to be taken care of in the next few months, a year, 5 years? What would your recommendation be?
That project, I would recommend you get done next year. And the primary reason for that is if you visit that site, you will see holes in the concrete about this big. If you look underneath in those openings, you will see voids, you know, where soil's been lost and undermined the surrounding areas of the slab, you know, to depths of, you know, a foot. So all that is saying this is not just going to fail sometimes, it is failing now.
To. And I don't know if you've been down there when it's rained.
No, I'm not.
It's literally that water's coming in and shooting a 12-inch, 16-inch bubble out of the water. So I want, for the sake of the community, because I know this is something people ask, like, this needs to be fixed soon.
So you're saying we next year?
Yeah, what do you mean by next year?
2020.
This year.
So spring.
Yeah, this construction season.
I suggest that, you know, you move forward with this. You know, if you have any questions, comments about the plans, let's get those in there. Let's get things changed. Let's get forward construction plans issued. Let's rebid it and try and award the project by, say, end of April, so the contractor can schedule the work anytime this summer or early fall. You know, we can put a completion date in the documents, and you know, because ideally you'd like him to do the work in the August, September time frame where there's the least chance of precipitation events, because, you know, the purpose of that is to trap flow coming in, so that's where the water comes in at. So if you do it in the spring and there's a lot of rain events, he's got to put up a cofferdam, you know, upstream just slightly of the construction so that he can work that area, and that thing will just constantly overflow and his construction will get damaged and you'll get claims, you know, well, I didn't propose doing this 3 times because of storm events, you know, but if you do it in the dry season, if you will, you know, then the likelihood of storm events and overtopping of that are minimized. And hopefully, you know, he's got a big enough window he can get in there, do the work, be done, have it back ready, and then remove the cofferdam. I don't recall specifically right now, but I think I had a provision in there that would allow them to excavate a bypass channel around the side away from the road. But there's also a provision for bypass pumping, which for the size storm events, stopping by the water coming in that area, you're probably going to have pretty big pumps to fully deal with that. But you know, it's his choice. You know, he can have small pumps and just deal with the water when it overtops. He can have big pumps. He can excavate a bypass channel and then have to repair that bypass channel when he's done.
My last comment, you guys don't like to talk about, but my last comment would be, I think, you know, in your eyes, this is something that is so simple we should be handling this ourselves. I think we're up against a few things. First off, you know, we want to make sure this is done right. We want to make sure that it's done properly through inspections. And then another thing that sticks out to me is being around as long as I have with the board is we can't hardly get bids out here because there's been so many times we call and say, we want a bid, we want this. They don't take us serious. So I think that's another reason we need to look at that. So that's all I know.
So you would be also helping us initiate bids with other companies as
yes.
well?
Other yes.
than what we have seen?
Not helping us. Dude.
I mean, we provided Darrell with a list of contractors that we recommended that we thought might be interested, that would be a proper size for that project. We'd probably go back to those same contractors and say, you know, your contact before you didn't submit a proposal, why not? And, you know, we'd like you to propose on it for this season's work. You know, possibly just at the time it was bid, you know, the contractors were, you know, we call it not hungry. You know, they had plenty of work lined up and didn't need something else. You know, that's one of the advantages of getting it out as soon as we can, because they don't have their work lined up for this coming season yet. Probably get a lot more interest and a lot better prices.
So for the design, then, just a couple questions. Two things. One was, and I know we're trying to keep the costs down, so I don't know, is it wise to just handle the pipes that are already in there as something that is, when they excavate it, if they appear as though they're not in integrity, is compromised to replace them, or is it wise to just, because we're doing this, we only want to do it once, replace them?
That's a little bit of a complicated question to answer, simply because, you know, the pipes have been in there for, you know, presumably since the thing was built. They're corrugated metal in a lot of cases. There's every reason to believe that there's corrosion happening, but they're too small to actually inspect. But they seem to be functioning very nicely and, you know, doing the job, and have been for some time. So, you know, it was kind of felt when we did the design that, you know, we would not call for them to be replaced. You know, during construction, when they excavate the area and start regrading that embankment, you know, that possibly they'd uncover those, we'd get a better picture. And if they do find something, it's not that difficult for them to run to the local yard and pick up, you know, a few feet of whatever size pipe it is, replace it, you know, put the elbows on, put the caps on the upstream end. You know, and they're going to come back and say we need more money, which is certainly a legitimate thing for them to ask for.
Can we just
ask
for two separate bids?
Or add a bid option? You know,
We could do that, yeah.
I think that's what we need to do 100%.
We can include a separate.
We would ask them to inspect it and then upon their inspection.
In my opinion, I mean, if it all needs to go in new.
Yeah, I mean, why put a whole new dam and not do the next one step?
Yeah,
that's going to be because you don't know how much it costs.
One
of the bids I know had it included as far as an option of including that. It was a couple $1,000 extra. I think that
by using it as an option, as she suggested, is a good way to go because it gives us a. It gives us an option. Absolutely. We don't have to do it.
But if it's a couple $1,000 at that point, we need to replace it.
That was FCI, though. They were 4,000.
Are there different qualities of pipe available?
Oh, yeah,
certainly. Yeah. You can do concrete pipe. You could do PVC, HDPE.
I think
you want to put exactly what's in there. I mean, it's lasted 50 years.
And, you know, I mean, I've seen corrugated metal pipes that corroded, the bottom corroded out, you know, in a very short time just because the flow coming in was acidic. You know, it happened to be coming from a strip line area, perhaps. You know, and that the soil's disturbed.
Salt around here, too.
Yeah, there's that, too.
Oh, pig crap.
And I've seen stuff that's been pristine, you know, after 25 years, and you know, it was planned to be replaced, and you look at it, and you go, why are we doing this? You know, this looks as good as this brand new piece of pipe we got sitting right here. So, you know, it's a little bit of a choice. And this is exactly, you know, the type of thing that would be discussed, you know, when, like I said, we submitted the plans. We said, look these over if you have questions or comments. Let's talk about them, and then we'll get you final plans. This exact topic that is appropriate to discuss at that point. And, you know, if the consensus is, let's add that back in, you know, easy to do, no, not a big problem. If the consensus is, leave it as is, you know, that's there. If you say, let's get an alternate bid for adding that, and tell the contractor, you know, videotape it to tell us what the condition is, you know,
Then the second question, the other thing I had was, is there any way we can minimize this cross-section anymore to try to reduce the material cost? Only reason I mostly say is because if we go with our lowest bid at the 109,000, not the lowest, but the second lowest bid at 109,000, it just basically depletes all of our coffers. So mm-hmm. if there was anything we could do engineer-wise to have maintained function but tweak the cross section, that would be another review comment that I guess I would provide back.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that we specifically excluded from our design scope was the hydraulic analysis.
I saw that.
You know, the purpose of the hydraulic analysis would be to quantify the flows coming in, to look at the cross-section of the weir and determine for the significant design events, how deep does the water get upstream of that? How deep is it is it going over the weir? Do you flood any roads upstream? You know, which that area is kind of flat. I don't think you're going to flood out the main road, but the side road right there, I think that's low enough. If that got deep enough, you could overtop that low section of the road. If you reduce the width of that and choke that down, that's just going to cause more backup, more depth of water in order to push that same volume through that smaller weir. That will increase the probability of flooding out the side street. Is Harker?
Harker's Corner.
Is the side street Harker's
yeah.
Corner?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
Oh, hold on. Well, but the side street.
Camelot Drive, the street coming in the neighborhood is Camelot Drive. The outside is
okay. Harker's yeah. Corner. I don't think you'd overtop Harker's Corner.
No, it'd be the
I think you would likely overtop just beyond the
Camelot intersection
yep. of Camelot Drive. Yeah. Now, you know, how long would that be flooded out? You know, could be hours, could be days, depending on the storm event. But you know, do you want to risk that and the associated costs of potentially damaging the pavement due to flooding in order to reduce the cost and reduce the size of your weir? You know, that's a choice that you have to evaluate and make.
I might not be on the same page.
Oh,
are
I was
talking about.
I was originally talking
the
about the. So it's like an 8-inch thing.
Yes.
Thick.
Are we talking about the thickness?
Yeah. Yes. You okay. were talking about so it's 9 foot wide and then it widens out even further. You're talking about changing the whole cross section and making it thinner. That would be the impact.
I think she's saying what we had has worked for 50 years. We haven't seen any issues. Why can't we go exact like on like?
Oh yeah, could it be 6 inches? Or I'm just looking for reducing material.
And I mean, yes, there will be some cost savings and reduction of material, but the cost of construction of this type isn't so much the material as it is the labor to install it.
Sure. Okay.
So, you know, the labor is going to be nominally the same, whether it's 6 inches, 10 inches, 12 inches. You know, it's just volume of concrete that goes in, and that's a few extra yards at, you know, I don't know, $300 to $500 a yard maybe. Yeah, but the labor to install it is going to be the same. So you know, thinning it up is going to save you a few bucks. You know, what we strove to give you here is something that, you know, was at least as good as what you had, if not a little bit better, so that it would perform better for a very long time, and you wouldn't have to worry about it again for many, many years, you know, as you have not had to till this point. But now it's in bad condition, and you want to pay the money to get it fixed and put it behind you and not have to think about it,
right?
You know, for the duration of your 10 years on the board here, and hopefully for many, many years after that.
And while you touched on it, that this should be addressed in the spring. So the bridges and the other dams, those don't have anything that we should necessarily address. What I'm trying to anticipate is if we deplete the funds, and then, but then we have to do something with the bridge, like the
deck. You said 5 years, didn't you?
Well, that's actually something Mindy asked that I address, you know, so that's a good opportunity to bring that up here. In our reports, we talk about replacing the deck beams on the bridge in 3 to 5 years. Okay. That is an engineering judgment based on the current condition and our opinion of how long can you realistically expect this to continue to perform as it exists now before it starts to deteriorate to a point where you have problems with performance and might have to post it for a restricted load. Are we able to predict that with any accuracy? Absolutely not. We're recommending that you be prepared for some sort of event that causes obvious deterioration and the need to replace the superstructure within the next 3 to 5 years, but it could be 7 years, 10 years before anything actually happens that causes a detrimental effect. Yeah.
And what are you saying? The deck beam, like the beams?
The beams, yes. The on a typical bridge.
The reason I ask is I've had some people comment and question me on this. The actual decking, the roadway surface, is that on township or that's not our responsibility, correct?
The bridge is yours.
The bridge, you mean the spillway?
Yeah. Yes. The structure spanning the spillway is the bridge.
Including the road surface?
Including the asphalt surface on top of it. That is yours. Okay. Many, many years ago, I can't remember, like 40-some years ago, when the original developer was getting out of the ownership of this area, the roads were jurisdictionally transferred to the township and the county. But nobody wanted the bridge because, one, that's a high-dollar item. Two, it's part of your spillway and part of your owner's permit for the dam. So the county didn't want it. Township certainly doesn't want it. You were kind of stuck with it. Okay. The thing that happened here was the previous boards all knew that the township was responsible for the roads and just lumped in the bridge along with the roads. Nobody thought anything about it. Half a dozen years ago, it was recognized that that is a bridge, and by bridge, the definition is 20-foot span, and I think that's 22, if I remember right.
It figures.
And so, it's a bridge. Somebody has a responsibility for maintaining that. Who is that? And so the board at that time asked us to look into the ownership, and that's when we determined that all the roads were given away, but the bridge was not. There's this gap in the description.
Who repays that, like when they do it? Do you know that?
What's that?
Like when they repave it or fix a crack, or is that down?
I think the township just has
done
it.
I think the township does it in part because they don't know that it's not their responsibility.
Plus, for continuity of the asphalt,
yeah,
would make sense.
Yeah. Now, yeah, there is a danger with just haphazardly seal coating over the bridge or adding 2 inches of asphalt if that should ever happen. And that the bridge, in its design, I can't speak to how the original design of this, but typical design allows for a future wearing surface. Every bridge out in there that you drive across, concrete deck, asphalt deck, whatever it is assumed that at some point it's going to have a 2 or 3 inch asphalt overlay put on it because the deck surface is going to get wear on it. So the bridge is designed for the additional weight of that. Once that's on there, you can't just come back and overlay it again because then you're reducing the capacity of the bridge for vehicle load. So the proper thing to do would be to mill that off and replace it, and so it's back to where it is. Now, I'm kind of going out in the weeds here on theoretical bridge construction and design, but yeah, the basic idea is the same. If the township comes in, you know, let's say every 3 years, and seal coats the entire neighborhood, and they just go right on across the bridge. The seal coat's about 3/8 of an inch. So, you know, in several cycles, you will build up an additional 1 to 1.5 inches. That's all weight that the bridge is carrying that it wasn't designed for. And so now when you get the full-size trucks, moving trucks, you know, people moving in and out of the neighborhood, you know, that hit that 80,000-pound highway legal limit, and they go across the bridge, and it's already overloaded, so to speak, from dead load, you know, that's when you could experience a significant event that caused you to need to act quickly to replace the superstructure and restore the capacity of the structure. Otherwise, you just post it, you know, for a 10,000-pound maximum load and hope that the moving trucks recognize that and go in the other directions and don't just come up and go, oh, load limit, oh, well, I'm going to go across anyway.
So all the seal coating is adding extra weight, which in turn could be doing damage to that bridge.
Not much risk of it because the township really didn't take very good care of roads. So
my point is, if they've done this for years and years and years, they could technically be damaging the bridge, and maybe we might have a case against
this.
Health
is considered a bridge, like you said.
Well, he's inspected it though.
Is there any way we could look at getting some funding to assist us with it? Is that available? Or?
The most likely source of funding would be through the county. You know, if you have a good relationship with the county engineer, which, you know, hopefully you do, you know, they would recognize that this is a public bridge, even though it's privately owned. You know, it serves a purpose. It needs to be maintained. And he has the discretion of allocating some of his pool of money every year to things such as your structure. You know, so if you start petitioning, you know, and annually request and, you know, maintain good relations, you know, at, you know, some point down the road, you know, he may, you know, either get tired of you asking and say, yeah, we'll pitch in, or, you know, he'll say, yep, it's in bad enough condition that warrants replacement because it's one of the 10 worst bridges in the county, and it will help you out with that. So, you know, you just need to, you know,
I don't think you're going to be getting one of the 10 worst bridges.
We need to remember that statement. Yeah. Make sure we're fighting against some help.
Do we know who the county engineer is?
This Peoria County, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's usually Corbin Vogel is who they have assigned.
Do you know him well? Make sure we stay in
dealing with him. Well, Corbin I've been dealing with having to do the parking lot and the pool construction.
Okay.
So I do have a...
Do we have a good relationship with him?
Next week.
I've only talked to him twice. So.
Shall we send him a basketball
birthday? We start now.
That's right. The last county engineer I knew, I can't remember her name, but it was a lady, and she should still be in that role. She's fairly young when she got that position, but I've kept up with the county engineer of late. Her name escapes me at the moment.
We just need to be sure that we, regardless if it's this board or next board, we need to make sure that's noted so we can try to fight for some additional funds.
Lobby for it.
Okay. So you're thinking that'd be our only opportunity? We wouldn't be eligible for state funds or anything like the motor tax?
Not as a privately owned bridge, no. Okay. I mean, yeah. If you had the local state legislator who was a resident here, he could always put an appropriation in the state funding bill to get you funding. Yeah. Those kind of weird things happen.
Melandrino, everybody.
So,
We know everybody.
You know, there are, point being, there are choice, there are options. You know, you just have to kind of think outside the box and start exploring those things, see, you know, where you can get a fish to bite, and just keep on those things, and eventually you have something.
Well, I ask these questions only because for us as a small community, you know, that's a big expense.
Absolutely.
If there's any options that we could go after, I would like to look at that now before it gets so bad that we're desperate.
Yeah.
Especially if I hear you right. So we fixed the Harker's Corner silt dam. The other two dams, I don't know, you call them upper dam, lower dam, but those
Camelot
two dams,
Camelot and Lancelot,
those are good as long as we maintain the vegetation. So then we just have, are they not? Then they have. Then we have the bridge, and the bridge pretty much is the beans.
Am
I simplifying it too much? Sorry.
Generally, you're correct. Well, okay. The earth embankments with the pavement on top, you know, there's almost nothing that can go wrong with those as long as they're maintained and mowed, and you know, you keep after any erosion problems.
And critters?
And critters, yep. The upper dam, the Camelot Dam, does have a spillway. It's a drop structure, has a square visible surface, above surface area with some bar grading. Drops down about 25 feet, turns to 90, and is a 54-inch diameter pipe that goes through the dam and has an elbow that flips up in below water in Lake Lancelot.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen that thing shooting 4 feet out of the water.
Yep.
And a heavy rain.
And in years past, before OSHA got all the authority it's got, I used to go down in that and go down that pipe and inspect it every year, which was always a fun thing. At least inspect it as far as till we got to the water line. Now we can't do that as a confined space. There's all kinds of regulatory OSHA issues associated with that. So what we started doing, and I think we did it for the second time this past year, was hire Hunter Hydrovac to videotape it for us. And then we inspect it by videotape. And you know, one of the things that I know, you know, here's one of the hidden skeletons again. Many years ago, when I was down in the pipe, there was a little stream of water running along the invert of the pipe, and it came to a pipe joint and it disappeared. So, you know, the water was going through the joint into the embankment outside, and the only way that happens is if there's a void outside the pipe that allows the water to flow outside the pipe down to the lower lake. How big that void might be, you know, it might just be a fractional inch, you know. Given enough time, it's going to get big enough, and eventually it'll surface, and you'll have a subsidence event in your upper surface. But we did do a project years ago where we installed from the inside seals, outward compression ring seals, to each of those joints. And over the years, you know, due to debris flow, those have been knocked loose and when washed out, and they don't exist anymore. Yeah, but that was a repair project that was done, was, you know, marginally successful for a while. I know that there's voids outside that pipe, and eventually they will make themselves visible on the surface. On your Lancelot Dam, we talked about the bridge, but you've also got the spillway itself. And half a dozen-ish years ago, there was a section of the wall that collapsed.
Yeah.
And you didn't hire us to design the repair, and that's fine. You know, but you know, the association pretty much, you know, had somebody design a quick repair, had hired a contractor, did the repair, restored the structure, and installed some additional bracing across so that the walls were braced and wouldn't, in future collapse wouldn't be very likely. Now, the concrete is not going to last forever. The concrete for the bridge, 50 years old plus or minus, and if you look at the reports, the bottom side of their U-channel, upside-down channels, and the bottom side of the legs coming down, in many cases, there's missing concrete, the rebar is exposed, or there's just
you know, cracking, and eventually the rebar will be exposed there. Not a big deal in and of itself, not a big danger, as long as your staff, kind of an annual program, goes in there and cleans off corrosion and paints the reinforcement with a corrosion-inhibiting paint, which that's been done sporadically, maybe.
Planning on doing it again this spring.
So. Okay. Yeah. So the fact that the reinforcement's exposed right now, or will become exposed to, you know, when another chunk of concrete falls down, is not a major concern. As long as you clean the corrosion, you paint it, and keep it painted so that it doesn't corrode, and you have suction losses, the size of the bar doesn't get smaller. It will still function just fine. You know, even if the bar is totally exposed and there's 2 inches clearance above the bar, you know, before you get to any concrete, it'll still function just fine. But these are all indicators that the structure is wearing out, it's reaching the end of its life, or has reached the end of its life, and you need to be planning for replacement. Similarly, the sluiceway, or the spillway itself, you know, you've had a failure, there have been some other issues. The wing wall, the one dissipator on this side, has some tieback anchors installed because that wall was falling off. You know, a lot of things happening, you know, a lot of cracking, it's just deteriorating, it's reaching the end of its life. It needs to be replaced. That's another major cost. You know, that's why, you know, probably 10 years ago in my reports, I started trying to emphasize that you need to be planning for these future events. And I think if you actually go back 10 years, you probably see I was recommending that you plan for repairing the bridge in 3 to 5 years. Every year, it's just 3 to 5 years, 3 to 5 years. The purpose of that is not to say the bridge is going to fail in 3 to 5 years, but you need to have financial planning available to you so that if something happens in the next 3 to 5 years, you're not caught off guard, you're not in an emergency situation, scrambling around, how do we pay to replace this thing? You put some thought into it, and you start accumulating funds. You may not have the full amount to cover it, you may have to borrow some, you may have to, you know, do whatever you're able to do with the residents here. But you know, at least you're not caught completely off guard with a $100,000, $150,000 expense that you didn't have any idea was coming. And 15 years ago, before you knew that was a bridge and it was your responsibility, that's exactly what could have happened. You know, the thing would have failed, you'd been looking around who's responsible, and fingers would end up pointing right back here, and then you'd be sitting going, now what do we do? So as you know, your program manager for the bridge and just your consultant, you know, it's part of our job to make you aware of these things, to give you budgetary estimates on what the cost of these things are, the spillway, the dam, or the bridge, the upper conduit. All those things at some point are going to need some major repair or replacement. Whether it's in the next 20 years, you know, can't say. But you need to be prepared for those things. Have some finances in place. And I think you've been doing that and doing a very successful job of that for the last half a dozen or so years. Now, I don't see your budgets. I don't know what your expenses are. I just know that the previous boards, you know, have been aware of that, have taken our cautions to heart, and started a program of setting aside funding for those future events.
Question on the Lower Lake silt pond dam, the one that I'm primarily interested in. Would you consider that in an imminent failure condition?
Yes.
In an emergency condition?
I don't know that I'd call it an emergency. Imminent failure, yes. Any storm event could fail and wash it out. Okay. What's the impact of that? You know, you're not releasing enough water that a breach wave is going to come through the lake and damage people's, you know, shoreline facilities, and it certainly isn't going to overtop the landslide dam.
You don't think that would damage shoreline there in that
coast
coming off the hill?
I don't think so, just because you're not dealing with enough depth.
I just feel like what I've seen with some bad storms, the water levels are quite a big difference.
And that's exactly what this is supposed to do. It impounds the water upstream at that point. so that it doesn't just come washing into your lake and bring all the sediments in with it, deposited in the lake. You're trapping it upstream of this little impoundment, this little dam.
The biggest thing about it would be the silt would be washed from it into the lake.
Yes, if a storm event happened and it washed out this dam, this little small embankment, the sediments that are trapped behind it would just get washed into your lake along with everything else. Yeah, really, you know, no harm, no foul, other than now you have sediments in your lake that you have to deal with.
They're clean.
Concrete chunks and everything else.
Yeah.
Another question. I know you don't expect this, but another area that seems at risk for us is on the west end of that sediment pond. That road, narrow road, was put in a few years back. And then there's that other small sediment pond there. And then where that abuts to the road, that's at risk, I think.
On the downstream side of the...
Yep, the downstream side.
I haven't looked at it, so I don't know specifically what you're observing.
It's eroded some, and there's a guardrail there, and the guardrail leans.
Okay.
And...
So that's a township issue, correct?
I would think that's either township or county, yes.
Yeah. That should be
a township road.
Yeah.
It should be a township road.
It's on their right of way.
Yeah.
You know, you should be bringing that concern to their attention and petitioning them to deal with that.
We tend to give you a plow.
Slogan.
Then they've done that.
Okay, reach out to them about that, Harold.
Yeah,
I know there was a call when I was in the office earlier in the week.
So on Harker's Corner, it'd be Kevin Sip I talked to. That's Harker's Corner, the guardrail on Harker's Corner?
Yeah.
Well, the whole side there. Could you make that
the guardrail and the embankment on the
now,
this side of
they would probably say, well, yeah, you got that little silt pond there, you know?
That's on the opposite side, isn't it? The problem area?
I don't think they can fight us on that.
No, it's on the silt pond side.
I don't travel to there.
The hydraulics there are bad. It's the tube that goes underneath the road there that is right there. I personally have crawled through that, and it's more than halfway filled with silt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's solid, but I did get an implement and pushed it through, and I think there's 2 feet of built-up debris that is solid, like almost like concrete.
And it's very likely that that's the case. You know, that's not uncommon with... a lot of small culverts, you know, they sediment full, you know, partially full over time. And then you get some major storm event where the water builds up to significant depth on the upstream side, which causes the velocity in the pipe to speed up dramatically, and it kind of cleans itself out. Now, you know, if the stuff's in there too solid and been there too long, you may never get it to wash out by itself. You know, sounds like that might be the case here.
Like plugged arteries.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. The one of the reasons that we do the biennial bridge inspections, and this is nationwide, is to look for problems. And you know, like I said, a bridge is 20 feet. There's plenty of culverts out there that fall in that 20 foot range. And I personally inspected several in East Peoria that have exactly what you're describing here. You know, they're 10 feet tall, 10 foot wide, three boxes side to side, but they're half full of sediments. You know, but it's because they're very flat, and it's in the Farm Creek floodplain, you know, so they tend to fill up. You know, and at some point, somebody's got to get in there and do some maintenance, clean those things out. The state has taken it a little bit further, and on the state system, looks at anything bigger than 6 foot. So there's a lot of small, you know, 6-7 foot diameter pipes out there that the state is looking at and maintaining. They don't have to, they just think it's a good idea. But they're not imposing that requirement on counties, townships, municipalities. They're just saying, hey, it'd be great idea if you guys did this too. You know, well, township, you know, they're strapped for cash, you know, can't hardly do what they need to do, so they're not gonna voluntarily look at things unless folks like you bring it to their attention and you know, make them aware.
I hate to be talking too much, but one other question. We have some smaller erosion control infrastructure, dry dams that you never inspect. You drive by them probably, but And they are, should the same standards that apply to the larger dams apply to the smaller dams involved with that, as far as being brush-free, tree-free? If they're overgrown with brush and trees, is that detrimental to them?
I'm glad you used the word should, because that's exactly what it is. They should be maintained to that same level. The problem, a couple problems with them overgrowing and having shrub-like vegetation is that when you have taller vegetation, it will trap debris that's trying to pass over the top of that impoundment. That will just cause more and more backup, more and more depth of flood water upstream, and eventually that will negatively impact somebody. Or it will build up to a point and eventually overpower the vegetation, just lay the vegetation flat, and you have this small breach wave flowing downstream through the channel. The other thing that can happen is when that woody vegetation dies, the roots are generally not deep, but they kind of go down and they spread. So all those roots die, and when the roots die and deteriorate, they leave all these little small passageways for seepage water to get through the dam. And when that starts happening, you start losing the soil particles of the dam as that water passes through, eventually creating larger and larger voids, and eventually small failure. Again, these are small structures. It's not going to be hugely detrimental to anybody except possibly the immediately adjacent property owners. The thing could happen, and you guys as owners of this dam, might never even know about it until Daryl happens to go out and look at it one day and go, holy cow, what happened to our dam? But I'm guessing that the adjoining property owners will be calling him up going, hey, what happened to our dam?
I know what you've described, but I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. So is there any truth to that the roots are holding those small structures together?
While they're alive.
While they're alive, but also just the root structure of grasses hold the surface together and keep the overtopping flows from eroding the surface. So it helps maintain
the
shape. Grasses. The deeper roots, while the shrubs and the trees and things are alive, that does help. But those things die, and when they die, there's all sorts of other problems.
It's my understanding the roots create pathways for rodents and, of course, for seepage.
Yeah.
Water seepage, yeah. Following the roots. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I will share this with you. I did an inspection for a residents association that has a dam that they have flat ignored for probably 40 years. It's got 20-inch diameter trees on it. Okay. the state just kept sending them letters, going and visiting, going, you got to do something, you got to fix this, this is not, you're not keeping up with your permit. We have the authority of doing bad things to you, but we really don't want to do that. We'd like you to voluntarily take care of this. And they just kept ignoring it. Well, finally, it caught up to them, and they decided, okay, we better do something about this. So they got us involved, and I went and did the inspection with the state's dam safety engineer, who I'd known personally for 25 years at that time. And we're looking at all these trees that are growing on the dam, and I'm going, you want those taken out, right? And he's kind of, well, let's let nature take its course. Eventually those trees will die, and when they die, they'll fall over, and they'll create a big hole in the dam, and they'll have to fix it. But I'm not going to tell them that they have to excavate 90% of the dam to take out these big root balls. Let's just let nature happen. Everything I've told you is what the regs require, and the deeper vegetation, the shrubs, the trees, are bad for dams. They're not allowable by permit. But what you're talking about in your upstream things are not dams. Okay, they're not dams from the regulatory standpoint of 6 feet or taller with 50 acre feet behind it, or 15 foot tall with 25 acre feet behind it. They don't fall under the need for individual permits. So you can ignore them or not. You can maintain them, you know, as good or half as good. You know, as long as you know, they're fulfilling your needs of, you know, keeping sediments out of your lake. You know.
To go back to the plans, it was the replacement dam was bid out on the not for construction drawing. Mm-hmm. Is that acceptable to do?
Sure.
Okay.
And you know, the primary reason that that's acceptable is you're a private owner. You're a private association. You're not public. You don't have public funding. You can do just about anything you want. You know, you don't have to bid the job. You can, you know, if one of you knows a guy that does some dirt work and can do some concrete work, just call him up and say, hey, we got this thing. You know, what it'll cost us to have you to take care of this? You know, and that's, you know, not, I can't say that's what happened when the wall failed down here, you know, but, you know, the stories I heard were not a whole lot different than that. You know, there's no, you have no obligation to follow any protocol other than if you happen to have bylaws that say, you know, anything above a certain dollar value, we have to have bid and we have to do this and this and this, you know, then, you know, you have to follow your bylaws, certainly. Other than that, you know, you're like any private residential owner. You know, if you got a water problem or your drywall's failing, you know, you just find a contractor and you say, fix this, and away you go.
So if the only comment, hypothetically, from the board is if we could take the drawings but then just have them have an option added for replacing the pipe, is that something that you would give us a revised proposal on, or is that something by just doing that would still fall within the $2,000 estimate range?
The thing about the proposal you have in front of you right now is, you know, I prepared that without any real knowledge of what your comments might be, and I think it's formatted as a time and materials not to exceed with an estimated cost. And, you know, the basic idea there is, you know, if all we do is $500 of that $2,000 estimate, then the other $1,500 is available, you know, for any of the other tasks that are listed there, you know, if they go over budget for whatever reason, or we simply don't spend that. You know.
Okay.
You know, if you signed off on the contract in its entirety, what's the total value? $10,000 something?
Yes, $10,500.
Okay. And, you know, if we're able to achieve everything that's in there for $7,500, you know, that's what we're going to bill you, $7,500. That's the terms of the agreement. Yeah, we're going to bill you for what we do based on what you ask us to provide. So, you know, now, if things go bad, you get a bad contract, it requires a lot of babysitting and, you know, slapping his hand and, you know, telling him he's got to take this out and do it over again and, you know, these kinds of things. You know, we're going to tell you that, and we're going to tell you that, you know, unfortunately, because of this contractor, we're going to go over budget. And as long as you authorize us to go over budget, you know, if it costs us 12, you know, then we bill you 12.
You mean
we would make you aware of that.
For your part, not what the contractor's doing.
Yes, yes. You know, we would make you aware of that before we incurred those excess costs, so that you're not sitting there going, well, the agreement says 10.5 and they gave us a bill for 12. What happened?
We're going to help us find the contractors. We shouldn't have those issues. Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't, yes. Now, you know, there are, the thing with taking bids is there's always somebody willing to do it cheaper and faster in their mind. And so if all you do is look at the bids, you know, that's not always getting you the best contractor. If you were a public entity, you know, municipality, you would want us to spend a lot more time putting a lot tighter contract and bid documents together because of that exact issue, so that you don't get a contractor that shortcuts the project. since you're not a public agency, and you're free to accept the high bid if you want to because you like that contractor and you don't know anything about the low bid contractor, you're not obligated to take low bid. So,
Steve had a question here.
Yeah. You said not for construction documents or fine. Is there a percentage of completion kind of nailed to that not construction drawing? Are they at a certain percentage of completion?
Well, they're in effect complete. Yeah, we completed the plans there are no other documents. There's no bid documents. There's no specifications beyond the two pages in the plan set. That was a decision to keep your costs to a minimum. But they're in essence done. They were provided for review, marked not for construction, because we didn't know if you were going to agree with everything we had in there and wanted to give you the opportunity to review those things, ask us questions, have things changed if you wanted to. It's just kind of the normal process. We could have just as easily given you the exact same thing, marked for construction, and still, if you had comments, we could address those things, make changes, and issue a new for construction set. It's a lot easier sometimes for record keeping to not issue a for construction set until you, as the owners, are satisfied that this is what you want to get out on the street. So that's really the difference between for construction.
In my experience, I did contract management for the federal government, and basically 97% drawings came to us for review, not for construction, and then we worked with the architect and engineer, and at the 97% stage, finalized everything before the final construction documents went out.
Right.
So that's why I'm asking that question. I've had a lot of problems in my career with 97% drawings going, not for construction drawings, going out to the contractor and coming back with a bunch of questions that a group like this wants to ask and never got their input in. And then you got mega change orders and all this other kind of stuff coming up during the construction that nobody really had a chance to think about before the final construction going out.
Right.
So,
you're absolutely right on
and change orders. And I'm glad you guys think about options, because change orders cost double what the options if you give it to them up front in the contract. I'm going to tell you right now, they cost double that back. So if you're thinking about new pipe and all this other stuff, you better put it in as an option, because if you see that once they've discovered it out there, it's coming back as twice as much as what you would get in an option.
Absolutely right.
So, no question. And that's just from experience.
Yeah, to this point, though, in the normal progression of a larger project, which is probably what you're used to dealing with,
yes.
You would receive schematic design plans that would be passed around for comment and then move toward design development. And then 50% construction documents, 75, 97. So there's a lot of steps along the way on larger projects where you as the owners would get the opportunity to look at things, give feedback, make changes, and affect the direction of the plan development. Still, 97% plans, they're still not done. And they're still subject to review and change in direction as you would see fit. In this case, very, very small project. Not a whole lot of option, we took the pipes out of the project just because they looked to be in good condition. We wanted to keep the cost of the project to a minimum for you and give you back something that would function for many, many years. But this is exactly discussions that need to happen. Why are the pipes not there? Decision we made not to include them at this time if you want them. They're very easy to put in. If you want to put in as an alternate bid item, that's very easy to do. These are discussions that ideally would have happened April, June, whenever we submitted those.
Anybody have any other questions? Deb or Glenn? Anybody else?
So, did I address everything you wanted addressed here?
You did, and just for clarification before you leave.
We were going to let him go.
Well, the takeaway that you're looking from us is for us to decide which boxes, some number, well, we know at least this one for tonight is marked off, but of the others, like, can we do this incrementally? Like, can we say we want to mark off the box for the $900 for the presentation tonight and possibly revising the drawings and then for sure construction administration and then think about if we want the others or is this like check them all?
You could go that route. Okay. What I would suggest, you know, because, you know, the size of the project, you know, the more steps you put into this, the higher our costs become.
Okay.
So, you know, you can check every box in there and, you know, return it to us and say, but let's talk about this thing incrementally.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, as we get certain things done, you know, we can talk about it, you know, just emails back and forth or whatnot. And if you go, okay, I understand where this is at, we're going to drop the next box. We want you to jump past bidding because we want this guy to do it. You know, we want to go straight to contract award.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll work with you.
But doing it incrementally could slow it down.
Could, would definitely slow it down, yes. I said imminent failure. Any storm event this spring, this summer, you know, could fail that embankment. That means it's going to happen. I wouldn't put money on it. Okay. You know, if you just can't see your way to doing it in 2020 and you want to plan for it in 2021, you're assuming a certain risk in delaying it.
Yeah. This is something I think we all agree needs taken care of, so we just need to go on.
I was very surprised it survived last year. All that ice was just ice and water. Just put a lot of pressure on it. I was shocked it survived. If there's any other questions? You got everything answered?
Yeah, I think we discussed in the executive section where we want to go, but I think we want to respond as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to move forward with it. So, if we don't have anything else for you, thank you for coming. We sincerely appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I think
last time I addressed this board was 8 to 10 years ago. So,
what was that for?
It was basically we gave our report.
Wasn't the same project, was it?
Not the same project. Yeah, we did our inspections on the dams. We gave our reports. And you know, people are looking at it and going, okay, I'm not sure what this means. You know, I see your discussion, your recommendations. We're not sure what this means. Can you come and explain it to us?
Yeah. I do have one quick question on the overflow seepage that through the pipe where it comes into this lower lake. You said there could be a void from that trickle of water. Mm-hmm. They put seals on. Those seals have gone. Because we did the visual inspection with the videotaping, which I have a copy of if anybody ever wants to see it.
Fascinating viewing, by the way.
Yeah, right. would you recommend GPR? Ground penetrating radar. That's to look into the ground and see if there's voids. We did that at Lake Carroll when I was up there. And, gee. So.
Long as
it wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, I don't offhand know what the cost of that might be.
And it's on a slope, so I don't know how effective it would be by doing it on a slope, because it's usually supposed to be on a flat plane, if I remember right.
Did you hesitate for a while because there's no evidence of the problem?
Why not just repair the pipe?
Well, I mean, I don't want to cause undue concern and cause you to spend money unnecessarily. So, you know, in responding to Daryl's question, you know, would I recommend GPR? I don't know that I've seen enough evidence yet to suggest that there's a large enough void to be that concerned about. But, you know, the last time I was down there and we saw the water exiting through the joint was, you know, probably 15, 20 years ago at this point. And for a while, those joints were resealed. But now they're open again. There's every reason to believe the flow is exiting. and it's got to go somewhere.
Is there an improved patch method for something like that?
There are some new products. There's a company called Zypex that has a coating system that we've started recommending to several of our clients. They have a really interesting video. I think it's on YouTube. Where
what's it called?
Zypex, X-Y-P-E-X, I believe is how it's spelled. They have a wall in a basement that's like 40 feet underground that they coated their product on. And for some reason that I do not understand, they decided they were going to drill a hole through the wall. And, you know, it wasn't just a small hole. It was a hole. I don't know if they were putting a pipe in or what. So they drilled a hole through the wall. Exactly. And they just released thousands of gallons of water that went behind this wall. Yeah. Any other wall would have cracks and seepage and all sorts of issues. But, you know, they're going, look at how great our product did. You know, we got all this hydrostatic pressure behind the wall. We've got this coating on the inside. Not a drop. You know, they reached it and flooded out the basement. Yeah, so we've recommended this product to OSF in Peoria. They've got some underground tunnels that have some leakage problems, and I think they perform very well there. They've got a variety of products that are some of it just looks like a paint. Others are kind of a mortar-ish, you know, that you can possibly get in there and just pack those joints and then paint around those areas. This stuff, you know, it's a crystalline matrix that reacts to the water and expands outward to fill cracks, voids, holes, and plug things.
Okay.
Is this similar to like slip lining for sewers and?
In such form of slip lining would be an alternative process. That would be a very expensive thing to do. Zypex, I don't think is all that expensive, other than the product itself is, you know, hugely expensive on a per gallon basis. You know, a couple $100 a gallon, something like that, if I remember right. And of course, the installation, you know, takes, you know, a little bit of specialized labor, but you know, that could be something to be worth looking into. You know, just, it can be applied to the wet surface, so you don't have to, you know, dewater the lake and let the thing dry down.
You're saying what should be something to look into?
Zypex. Okay. Putting some kind of a Zypex coating.
Well, once this project's completed.
Yeah.
Okay. Spell that once again, please.
X-Y-P-E-X, I believe, is how it's spelled.
Okay.
Do you have any ballpark that what you think it might cost for that? Because you
I
inspections don't. And all that, know the size and all that.
I don't off the top of my head. But I know I can get you the contact information, and you know they'd be happy to come out and talk to you, look at your videotape, tell you if they think their product is something that could work there, and could work with you on coming up with a price. Again, something we don't need to be involved in. You know, it's not that huge a deal.
We'll take the contact info.
Yeah, I'll get that to you.
Thank you. Okay, anything final? Last call?
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Always enjoy coming out and talking with